All right, welcome everyone. Welcome to the special edition version of the North American Snow Sports Journalists Association Professional Development Seminars. I am Jay Flemma, the Vice President of NASJA, and I want to give a big welcome to all of you and tell the rest of you also that tonight is being specially recorded to be broadcast as an episode of Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio. So say hello. We want to welcome one of the rising stars and true greats and instant classics of the winter sports industry. A man who has been proven to be someone who has made skiing and winter sports and snowboarding more egalitarian and more affordable, and has brought it to all of the masses across the country. Doug Fish is the founder of IndyPass and also of Snowvana. And he is here live with us today and is going to tell us all about what's happening with Snowvana and the latest with IndyPass and Black Mountain and everything else that he's going to be working on. Doug, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you for that that wonderful introduction. That was I'll try my best to live up to it here over the next hour or so.
Well, it really is impossible to overstate the impact that you have had on the industry in such a good way, and especially for the rank and file Joe Sixpack and Jane Sixpack skier and snowboarder. We're grateful for everything that you've done, and it's really fascinating to watch and see all the things that have been happening. So let's start with the biggest news, which is Snowvana. But let's take a step back, and for all of the listeners that aren't familiar with Snowvana, tell us, what is Snowvana? What was its genesis? And guide us through its career arc thus far.
Okay. And thank you all for being on this call today. It's an honor to speak to the NASJA group. And I sit on one of the committees, and I think what you do is I think it's just a great organization. So Snowvana started in 2016. It actually preceded IndyPass by about 3 years. And I've been involved in ski resort marketing for about 35 years. And at the time I was working with Timberline and Ski Bowl on Mount Hood. My hometown is Portland, Oregon. And we were doing some marketing for them. And we were also working with Snow Basin down in Utah. Been the agency of record at Mount Bachelor and Tamarack in Idaho. So we've got a long history working with ski resorts up to that point. And the folks from Timberline, Jeff Konstam and Kirk Hanna, who owns Ski Bowl, came to us and said, "You know, we're not happy with the ski show that takes place in Portland. It was a show called Ski Fever. It'd been there probably 30 years, and had been kind of gradually going downhill." They said, "We want to, we want to start up a new ski show in Portland, and we'd like you to take it on." So, at the time, I was recovering from a heart attack that I'd had earlier that year, and I was kind of, a little bit down in the dumps, and that was just that sounded like the greatest project I could ever come up with to get my mojo back, and that's really what it was. So we produced a ski show, and it was a huge flop. Nobody came, but we got it off the ground, and we created an event. And it grew, and we moved it around to different venues, larger venues. Eventually, we bought out the other ski show and became the only show in Portland. And it continued to do well after the Indy Pass was launched in 2019-20. Snowvana continued to grow, and it was kind of a side hustle for me at that point. Indy Pass became my primary focus. And then when I sold the IndyPass in 2023, I also sold my marketing agency that year. But I decided to hang on to Snowvana. I thought it would be kind of a fun thing to do in retirement. And so a couple of years went by. Stuck around IndyPass, and I decided, the ski business is too much fun. And they say if you love your work, if you love what you do, you'll never have to work a day in your life. And I decided, well, I'm having too much fun. Why would I quit? All these great people that I've met. And so I stuck on with IndyPass for another year, and I'm in the process of renewing my contract with them for another multi-year run, because it's a great thing, and I like being a part of it. And Snowvana, meanwhile, I had kind of turned over the production and all of that to a young man named Quinn McIntyre, who happens to be dating my daughter. They live together. I introduce him as my future son-in-law, and then people kind of get it. But he's been running Snowvana, and when I sold IndyPass, he had been working with IndyPass too, and kind of doing Snowvana on the side. When we sold IndyPass, he had all this extra time on his hands. I had all this extra time on my hands, and we decided, okay, let's scale this thing. Let's take Snowvana to the people. So we started adding markets. 3 years ago, we added Seattle. Then last year, we added Wisconsin. And this year, we'll be in New England, in the Metro West suburb of Boston. And over the next couple of years, we plan to open up Philadelphia and then either Chicago or Detroit. We're still looking for a suitable venue in one more Midwest market. So we'll have two in the Northwest, two in the Midwest, two on the East Coast. And then I think we'll hit pause and see how things look at that point. But that's our goal, and we're very excited about coming to the East Coast. Boston is an incredible ski market. I think it is the number one ski market in the country. It is the number one market in the country for IndyPass. There's, I think, 90 lift serve ski resorts in New England, and just a lot of passion, and it's got such a legacy of ski shows. The first ski show in Boston was took place in the mid 60s, so there's been a ski show there for 60 years, and it is just an incredible thing for us to carry on that tradition and see what we can do with it.
Oh, we're definitely going to get into your continuing the tradition. You're picking up the baton that had been dropped. Okay, we're definitely going to get into that. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the interesting things that you mentioned in that excellent breakdown. Let's take it back to the flop. Tell us what was the key to turning the flop into a success first in Portland.
Well, Jay, when you take on something new that you've never done before, you learn a lot of things along the way. I think we all learn by failing, right? And we'd never put on a ski show before. We'd worked with a lot of other events. I my early in the, my 20s, I was in the concert business. We put on concerts, and
Yes.
so
You put
but
on the Grateful Dead at Autzen Stadium, didn't you?
We did a bunch of shows at Autzen. Yeah, a lot of Grateful Dead. But never put on a ski show. So we did a lot of things wrong. And then next year it was a little bit better, and next year a little bit better. And we learned as we went, and I think we're pretty good at it now. It's taken 10 years, but we're still learning. We still put on a show and we go, gosh, why did we do that? And I think that's just the way life is. You have to. If you never put it out there and try something new, you'll never, learn how to do something new.
Now, when did you first branch out into a different city beyond Portland, and what was the key to be able to take it to that level?
Well, our first expansion was into Seattle, which is, 3.5 hours north of Portland, so it's relatively close logistically. And through our research, we found a lot of people were coming to Portland, Snowvana, from Seattle. We didn't we were surprised to learn that. And Seattle's a great ski town, ski city. There's three ski resorts, big ski resorts within an hour of Seattle, and you've got the BC and the Canadian Rockies right there. So we knew it was a good ski market, and we found a really cool venue up there. It was a World War II airplane hangar. It was part of Boeing's test field. I think it was actually it's still a federal facility, but
Was it an old Quonset hut?
big old Quonset
Oh,
hut.
sure. Yeah, one of the old hangars from back in the World War II days.
And it's part of Magnuson Park now,
Boy.
and it's a big federal a campus there. NOAA is on the NOAA is there. And but anyway, so this really cool old building was just the perfect size. It was about 20,000 square feet, and we rented that, and put on a show, and people came, and so we did it again, and we're queued up for our third year in Seattle this year.
Okay, and so from Seattle, tell us then, where was the next expansion?
In building the Indy Pass, I spent a lot of time in the Midwest, and the Indy, the, you know, a lot of the big passes kind of ignored the, and still do ignore the Midwest. But we knew that there's a million skiers in the upper Midwest states, and they may have only 10% of the skiers in the country, but they have a third of the ski resorts. And it's just remarkable how many little bumps are up there and how passionate the people are in the Midwest about skiing. And you think about it, it gets pretty cold up there. And you can play hockey, I guess. You can ice skate, you can go snowmobiling and ice fishing and skiing. So it's pretty popular. We have Indy Pass has a great partner up there in Schmitz Brothers Resorts. Rick Schmitz and his brother Mike own Little Swiss outside of Milwaukee, along with Nordic Mountain and Crystal Ridge. Those are all kind of in a bit of an arc to the north of Milwaukee. I'd talk to Rick about he does a ski swap at Little Swiss, and we talked about an event there, and it just so happens that Crystal Ridge is part of a sports complex about 10 miles south of Milwaukee, in Franklin, Wisconsin. And this is a really cool sports complex. They have a baseball diamond there. They have a lot of baseball tournaments. They've got a top golf type facility, and then they have an indoor soccer arena. And then across the parking lot is a ski resort. It's not a ski resort. It's a ski area. Let's be honest. It's a little beginner hill. But and this is one of the funny things. They say, all those Midwest ski areas, they're all built on garbage dumps. Well, Crystal Ridge is actually built on a garbage dump, and it
Hey,
took
some of the best golf courses in America are built on toxic waste dumps and
Yeah,
garbage dumps.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I mean, what a great use of
And
unusual.
nowadays we can clean that stuff up better than we ever could before. You'd be astonished. So tell us more about where you landed the show there and how it grew.
So, Rick introduced us to the owner of this complex, and we came to find out that the indoor soccer arena was kind of underutilized, and they were looking at doing some trade show, consumer shows in there. So they put a golf show in there, and let me put my earbuds in. My terrier might interrupt me. So they did a golf show in there, and no, those aren't picking up. I'll tell them to be quiet.
Now, don't break the fourth wall.
Sorry about that. Anyway,
Go for
so
it.
we did the show in this indoor soccer arena, which was Great venue, very, very inexpensive. It was a very low risk show to put on because we were able to keep the cost down. Milwaukee's going to be our smallest market if we, complete our expansion. But the show went really well. We drew about 3,500 people. And I think we had 22 ski resorts represented, and everybody was just thanking us for coming to Milwaukee. Evidently, they don't get the kind of love that, Chicago gets, right?
And
And
about how many did you draw annually, or do you draw annually in Portland and Seattle, respectively?
Seattle was about 3,500, and that was down actually because the Mariners had a playoff game on Friday. And then they had another playoff game on Sunday. So they hadn't been that far in the playoffs for quite a while. They were playing the Blue Jays. And so we were down a little bit, but Portland did 11,000. We did 18,000 people last year, and we're projecting about 30, after we add Boston.
Well, now we come to that is the elephant in the room. Please tell us as much of the who, what, when, where, why of the new ski show in Boston, the Snowvana Show. Why don't we start with the dates and the location?
So the dates are for the new show in Boston. We call it Boston. It's actually Marlborough with Massachusetts. It's November 6th through 8th, Thursday, Friday through Sunday. And we had no intention of going to Boston. I'd been to Bernie Wyschl's show before he sold it to SIA several years ago. I went there, to represent IndyPass. We had a booth, and IndyPass was brand new. And I was looking around, thinking, "Man, this is a ski show." I had my little ski show back in Portland, and man, this is a ski show. It was just massive, and he did 40,000 people or something. And I got to know Bernie pretty well. He kind of took me under his wing. He knew about the Indy Pass. He knew about, in fact, he comped me the space for Indy Pass, and he knew about Snowvana. And he and I have been friends ever since. And he's shared a lot of, a lot of ideas with me, and a lot of trade secrets, so to speak. And in fact, I texted with him just a couple of days ago, and he gave me that statistic about the first Boston show being around since the '60s.
So tell us more about when our corporation is going to be able to contact you to get to book booths. When, what's the schedule for organization of the event?
Well, we are, we're happy to take reservations right now, Jay. And you can go to our website and click the link that says Exhibit Now and fill out a little bit of information. And, Quinn, my colleague, will he'll be in touch immediately. But yeah, we're selling booth space. We're actually, we're in the deep heart of the ski season right now, so we're not talking to a lot of ski resorts. We're talking to corporate sponsors. We're talking to destination marketing organizations like Ski New Hampshire and Ski Massachusetts, those kind of folks, Toyota, Nokian Tires, those kind of people right now. And once we get into maybe a little bit later in the season, we'll be able to start bugging the ski resorts because they'll have a little more time on their hands. But yeah, we're taking orders, and we'd love to talk to anybody who's interested.
What more information can you give us regarding some of the celebrities we might see or some of the big names that'll be coming by?
Yeah, well, we're a little different than Snowbound. Well, actually, we're a lot different. Snowvana is a smaller show. We're going to be in about 47,000 square feet there in Marlboro, and I think their show's right around 100,000. We have a really big gear sale. We have a consignment swap. We bring in a lot of demos from the previous season, a lot of manufacturer demos. We'll have multiple retailers The Boston shows always had one big retailer. We're going to bring in, perhaps as many as five or six. We have five in Portland and three in Seattle. So, and there's a lot of ski shops, really good ski shops in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and we've got a couple that have already committed. So that's one thing. We're going to have a big gear sale, and we'll have deep discounts. And we're trying to do for gear and lift tickets and what IndyPass did for passes, and that's make it affordable for people and get people excited at the beginning of the season. And so we have a huge gear component. Our goal is to have, 40 plus resorts there representing all of New England and perhaps Quebec. And typically they're all going to be coming with some deals, $99 for two midweek tickets or whatever. There's a lot of those kind of deals. Last year in Milwaukee, I think if, with your ticket, you got four free lift tickets. That were, just provided free of charge from some of the participating resorts, and we'll try and drum up as many of those kind of deals as we can. We have, some crazy fun stuff that we do. We do a
Such
frozen,
as
we do a frozen t-shirt contest. We freeze these t-shirts, solid like it's like a ball of ice, and they take about 10 minutes to unwrap, but the first person that gets one on their body wins a pair of atomic skis. And it's a huge hit. We do one each day and 10 people get to participate. And we do, stupid stuff like that. We're going to have the Snøhvane Sumo Bowl. Okay. This is an inflatable ring, about a 20-foot diameter inflatable ring with 3-foot walls on it. And then we have two inflatable, best way to describe them is like inflatable beer cans. You put them on your body and you try
I've
and knock the
seen the
other.
inflatable sumo wrestler
Yeah,
bodies.
so you
Yes,
try
they're
and knock the
hilarious.
other one down, and we're gonna have, people are gonna be able to go at it, we're gonna brand
It's almost like zorbing.
yeah.
Giant plastic balls that people get into, and then
Oh
they slam
yeah,
into each other. That's got to be a
right.
blast and a half.
Yeah, and so we'll do stuff like that, and we'll give away skis for the winners, and we've had plank contests and squat contests and just silly things, but that's what people like.
I challenge you to a sumo bowl.
Okay, you're on, Jim. You're on.
I'm sure we'll look like a couple of puff balls in our uniforms because those things you do.
We'll bring in 50 Christmas trees and just put them around the place just for ambiance,
Now tell us about logistics. Have you partnered with a hotel for everybody?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there's a hotel on site, and it is a very nice Best Western. They have single rooms for 149. That's the rate that we've negotiated for our participants and our attendees. 149 for a single. They've got a great buffet, breakfast buffet that goes with that. They've got meeting rooms, for conferences, for meetings and so forth. So it's great. We've got free parking out there, 1500 free parking spaces around the venue. It's a non-union hall, so they won't charge you to carry your booth in, and it's just a very friendly, low cost facility compared to the higher priced convention centers that exist in most major downtown like Boston.
And how's logistics getting in and out and parking for those of us that'll be driving?
Oh, it's very accessible. I'm not from the area, of course, but it's right off of 495. That's just the big loop. And I think it's Highway 20 that runs directly out from Boston to Marlboro. And it's about halfway between Marlboro and Worcester. So, we're going to pull from both those markets, we think. And it's maybe a half an hour drive, maybe 40 minutes from downtown Boston. But The Metro West is it's a great area. It's high income and pretty densely populated suburbs. And we're very excited about the venue.
Well, we're excited about it too. Doug, your own career arc is absolutely fascinating as well. I mean, we know that you went to business school and you spent much time in the concert industry, but you really have built up everything, Indie Pass and Snowvana, starting with just yourself. And now your company, you were telling me earlier, has as many as 40 employees. Tell us a little bit about what business advice you have for young entrepreneurs and how you sort of built up this empire from yourself to a big organization that's got 40 moving parts at minimum.
Yeah, well, let me be clear. We don't have 40 employees now. That was a previous lifetime. And I have 1.5 employees right now, and I'm the half, okay? And that's the way we like it at this point in our career. But yeah, I've always been a bit of an entrepreneur. I had a marketing agency for a long, long time. That's when I had 40 employees. And but I've just always loved the ski business since I was a little kid. I was drawn to it, and as soon as I got into marketing, I tried to figure out ways to trade services for free lift tickets, and that's really how it all began. But for anyone who's starting a business, whether it's in the ski industry or any business, I think there's a couple of key things to being successful. One, you have to be passionate about what it is you're doing. You can't I don't think you can look at the world and say, oh, there's a need for this particular widget. I'm gonna find a way to get into that widget business. It's got to be something that you're passionate about, because you really have to work at it for a long time with no compensation in order to succeed. And that's the second thing. If you're gonna start a business, if you're gonna bootstrap a business, and I've always bootstrapped them, I've never had investors. You're not going to get paid for a couple of years. It took 3 years before I started drawing a paycheck from IndiePass, but I had this marketing agency, that fortunately, kept the lights on, and I was able to go work on this passion project. And so, you've got to have resources, and businesses run on cash. That's like our oxygen. If you run out of cash, you die very quickly. And I think that's what puts most small businesses under. And so the best way to prevent that, I think, is for the owner, the founder, just to work for free until it's profitable enough that they can start drawing a salary or something. But
Can you point to what you think were the biggest breaks that you got that turned out to be mileposts for you in your career or turning points that allowed you to increase and level up every time?
I think they were kind of life choices. I was in the concert business in my 20s and early 30s, because it was fun, and it was a party, and
I have both sympathy and empathy on that one. As you know, I was in the business 20 years too.
it was a fun time. It was the 70s and 80s, and it was kind of the golden era of the concert business. And But then, I wanted to settle down, so I, kind of drifted into the marketing business, which was a little more mainstream, and paid a little better, and I wanted to have a family and have a mortgage and all those things. And then I started getting burned out on the advertising. As an ad agency, and clients, and pitches, and it's a grind. And then I had a heart attack because I was pushing so hard, and I just lost my mojo. And then, Snowvana came along, and I credit Jeff Konstam and Kirk Hanna for, giving me that opportunity. And that really, lit a spark for me, and got me going. And from there, we came up with the idea for the Indie Pass, and it's been the most rewarding period of my career.
All right, so tell us, what is the next amount, or sorry, when is the next date that you're going to drop more news about Snowvana?
Oh, I think we'll probably, it's kind of behind the scenes at this point, Jay. We're selling booth space and sponsorships, and that'll go on all through the summer, and then our tickets will go on sale for consumers right after Labor Day weekend. They're going to be
What's the price, by the way?
$5 advance. $5, and parking is free. And then if you wait to buy at the door, it's $10. So it's and at these shows, at the last couple hours, you see the exhibitors are all standing around looking at their watches, and because the traffic just drops off the last 2 hours. So for the last 2 hours every day, it's free. And what we see at that mark, we see a burst of new people coming into the event, and it's full again, and everybody's going hard until the finish. We'll probably do 2-for-1 tickets on Sunday, because we know we're going up against the Patriots and the Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks, and so we'll make it cheap. And if you have a Toyota, you get 2 free tickets, period, to any day, any show. Show us your key, and tickets are free. What else? Anyway, that's so the next big announcement, and when we'll really start our consumer marketing, will be in September.
Now tell us, normally when we used to have Snowbound, NASJA, the Hall of Fame, and Esha would all have events commensurate at the same time. Do you anticipate possibly co-branding with NASJA for something or working with Esha in the Hall of Fame as well?
Yeah, we would be happy to partner with those organizations, and do whatever we can to accommodate you. We've supported nonprofits ever since the beginning of Snowvana. The hotel has some great meeting rooms that could accommodate whatever you need. Catering, those kinds of things. We plan to hold a reception on Friday night for our resort partners that come, and that might be something that we could incorporate. We're also going to do a consignment swap, and so people can bring their old gear and sell it at the show. And we're looking for a local nonprofit with a good volunteer base that wants to run that. They can, we'll split the revenue with them, and we'll promote the heck out of it, and we'll give them the space and all that. But we need someone that, to work that part of the show for probably 5 days. I'm guessing it's probably 5 or 6 volunteers that are committed over about a 5-day period. And but they could raise a lot of money and have a lot of fun. We'll throw a bunch of tickets their way, and so yeah, we're very, very willing to work with nonprofits. We give, we do a lot of really, deep discounting for booth space for nonprofit organizations that want to get in front of people, and we've done a lot of fundraising for those groups as well.
We're talking with Doug Fish here on Golf News Net, Jay Flom, Sports Report, and iHeartRadio. We also have the North American Snow Sports Journalists Association on. Tell us, journalists, okay, if we were to start writing stories tomorrow, what is the big story that you want us to break?
Well, that's a very good question, Jay.
What's
And
the latest news you want everybody out there to know?
I think that Snowvana is, unique in that no one has ever created a coast-to-coast branded Get Stoked Festival. We kind of call it a Get Stoked Festival, okay? And all the components that I described go into it, but really it's about coming in October and November, being around like-minded people who are passionate about skiing and snowboarding and getting stoked. That's our motto, get stoked at Snowvana. And now we have a coast-to-coast brand, and we plan to fill in with some markets in between the coast, like I said, Philly and maybe Chicago, maybe Detroit. And it's a way for people to come together and save some money and get ready for the season. I mean, it's an age-old formula, these ski shows, but we're just trying to do ours a little bit differently and have a little more fun. I forgot to mention that the biggest difference between Snowvana and Snowbound is that we do not have a lot of speakers, okay? We tried bringing in athletes in the early days of Snowvana and spent a lot of money, frankly, to bring in some Olympic heroes, and it just didn't really move the needle. And so we will have some speakers, and we'll have a couple of forums, but it's downplayed. We'd rather have a band, and we do. We'll have a band playing every day. We're going to show ski films on in the bar. We'll have a bar, and of course on Sunday we'll show the Patriots game if it's on during hours.
Well, while we have you here, give us the latest on Indy Pass. The last time I checked was at the start of the season with Eric Mogensen. You were up to 270 different venues on four different continents. Tell us, what's the latest that's been happening?
Well, we're signing up new resorts all the time, and we'll be going on sale again for 26-27 right around the 1st of March. And we will have an announcement at that time of some new resorts that are joining the pass. To be honest with you, North America is pretty well tapped between Indy, Icon, and Epic. We've gotten most resorts that want to be on a pass have joined a pass. And there are a few holdouts that drop off every year, but our expansion now is really we're really focused on international expansion and Canada. We made a big push into Eastern Canada last year. I think we have 8 or 10 resorts in Quebec, and that's proven to be very, very successful. We're seeing a lot of Americans heading north into Quebec this winter,
Didn't Dan Egan do a film about Turkey? I saw him pocketing his Indy Pass in one scene. That was pretty good product placement there, I have to say.
He did a film at one of our Indy Pass resorts in Turkey, and
Really good film.
Europe is proving to be very very target rich environment for us. We just signed another three resorts in France today, I believe. So yeah, a lot of exciting things happening there. We're working on pricing for this next season, and the price will still be unbelievably affordable and the best deal in skiing. There's no question.
One more question from me before we throw it out to everybody out there. But before we get to that question, I neglected, you went through a very nice breakdown of the Midwest, and I neglected to throw a nod out. We have a new and very active Midwest bunch of fellas here, so I do want to throw it out very quickly and say hello to Mark Liebman and Mark Schiller and Greg Snow and anybody else who's out there who is from the Midwest. So before we turn to them, Black Mountain, which has been saved in part by all of you good folks at Indy Pass in New Hampshire. Can you give us the latest on what's happening there? I hear that they're doing quite well.
They are. And Eric Mogensen, who bought the Indy Pass from me and who also owns Anteben Systems, a software company that specializes in systems for small ski resorts, saved Black Mountain. John Fitchera was throwing in the towel. Summer of 24, summer of 25, and we heard about it. John called me and said, "Yeah, I'm not going to open this year." And I called Eric and I said, "John's throwing in the towel. Maybe we could loan him some money." And he did. And that, oh, this was in 24, and it kept it going. And then last year he bought it. And John said, "Yeah, this is still not working. I can't do it." So Eric bought it, and he moved to New Hampshire from, a beautiful, beautiful place in Colorado. And he's been there ever since. Last year, revenue and visitation increased 4x over their best year ever, according to the records that he's got. And it continues to grow. He sold the first round of shares to some major investors, and the resort is on track to be turned over to, and it will be a community-owned ski resort very soon, sometime this spring, I believe. And then he's moving back to Colorado, and mission accomplished. And he'll get paid back for his investment, but he's not going to take a dime for his time or any of the staff time that he paid for, to be there, his team to be there. And it's really a remarkable turnaround, and I think it really shows that some of these small resorts that seem so hopelessly lost and unable to compete can be saved. And it just takes, someone who has the know-how and the passion and the resources to pull it off.
All right, so I'd like to ask our secretary, Stephanie Barnhart, to help me out and keep an eye out for anybody who has questions for Doug. I'm going to open it up to the peanut gallery. Let's start with Mark Liebman. Mark, you can unmute yourself. There you go.
Yeah, so I live in the fourth largest, or maybe even third largest metroplex now. And it's also in the heart of the fastest growing economy in the world, not just the US. It's called Texas. And in Dallas, and I live in the Dallas area, we have 5 flights direct every day to Aspen on just one airline. And we have flights to Purgatory, Durango, Salt Lake, whatever. It's a huge ski market, which nobody pays attention to. And so, Doug, just so you know, I can remember going to the ski shows in the 60s in Boston. So that's how old I am. I remember, in fact, I can tell you some stories about skiing on down little slopes there doing demonstrations as an instructor. We won't go there. It just tells you how old I am. Anyway, my question is this: is this is a huge ski market. You would never think of it, but if you looked at the real estate roles of the people who own condos in a lot of the major ski areas in the Rockies and God knows where else, New Mexico. Is there any thought of ever bringing a ski show back to Dallas?
Well, yeah, I've thought about it. I know that Dallas is a good ski market. It's a big flyout market. Chicago is actually the biggest flyout market in the country. That's according to Icon. And the problem is there's just no local resorts down there to support it. We'd have to bring resorts from Colorado and Utah, all the big guys. And what we're seeing is that Icon is a big supporter of ours, and Epic has started to kind of loosen things up with respect to support of these shows. But once Icon comes in and they got a big presence, a lot of the resorts say, "Well, Icon's there, so we don't need to come." And so I think it would be difficult to have a lot of resorts there. Now, a place like Boston, you can throw a rock in any direction and hit a couple of ski resorts from downtown Boston, and Chicago and Detroit. Michigan has more ski resorts than any state in the country, and Wisconsin is number four. And so, we have to really go where there's that kind of density. And in Portland and Seattle, we pull a lot of resorts out of BC. So it's not something that I would discount and say no way, never. But I think there's better market. Philadelphia is unserved right now. Chicago doesn't have a ski show anymore. The Windy City ski show shut down after COVID. And we think that those markets are, and Detroit is a very good ski market. Those are a better risk for us.
All right, looking for more questions. How? Hang on a minute there. I saw a hand go up. Yes, Michael. I'm sorry, Mark. Mark Schiller. You can unmute yourself.
Hi, Doug. I'm in Minneapolis along with my good friend Greg Snow. And we primarily concentrate on the Midwest and the upper Midwest. And
Sure.
I'm wondering, with your research or when you're out there, what do you predict the future of the mom and pops? And keeping them alive and keeping, I got to think that for most of them, the Indy Pass has been a lifesaver for most of them. And how I also feel that I think what is underserved in the Midwest, I just got back a few days ago from Montana, and it had been a while since I had been to Big Sky. So I went to Big Sky, and it's like, I don't know that I'll ever go back to Big Sky again. As much as I love Big Sky, Lone Peak, and all that, I took my daughter out there, but at $240 a piece to ski, what about the people that can't afford that, and how we need to keep pushing them towards the mom and pops? And to that end, I would also ask you, Greg and I have a two Facebook pages going right now. The one is the Senior Ski Bums Traveling Road Show, and the second one is Ski the Center, where we just want to concentrate on the center part of the country. So I suppose really what I'm saying is that moving forward, what do you view, how do you view the future of the mom and pops?
Well, I think the mom and pops have a bright future if they're well run and they have, good solid ownership. The ski business is the ski resort business is not one that you get into to make a lot of money. And I think anyone that owns a small ski resort is there because they're passionate about it. And and that's what's required. You make your money when you sell it. As with a lot of small businesses, you work for a reasonable salary, and then you sell it and you finally cash in. Because the capital requirements, the reinvestment that needs to be made every year sucks up all the profit. But if they're well run and if you allocate your resources wisely, and by that I mean, putting in snowmaking and making sure the lifts are running and have good marketing, it can be a very good business. If they're not, properly managed, they're going to go under because it is a tough business. And hopefully someone will come along and with the passion to carry the torch for that place. And we see that happening now. We see a lot of, wealthy people buying ski resorts and keeping them alive.
A follow-up on that question, Doug. Have you seen a negative impact as a result of some of the lawsuits, especially in Oregon, after that terrible decision came down about ski resort liability?
Yes, I think it's a big issue. It's a big problem in Oregon, and for those of you who are not familiar, there was a person got injured at Mount Bachelor in 2014. They sued, and eventually the Supreme Court of Oregon ruled that the waiver they signed did not protect them from did not protect the ski resort from negligence, and they were deemed to be negligent. And anyway, so waivers in Oregon are no longer protect the operator. And this goes for outfitters, White River guides, workout facilities. They're all covered under the same type of category. And so now insurance in Oregon is gone through the roof. It's gone through the roof everywhere, but here in particular, there's only one insurer that will insure ski resorts, and of course, they can charge whatever they want. So It is a big issue. It is being addressed in the current short session of the Oregon legislature. And we're all crossing our fingers that they do the right thing. But there are a lot of trial attorneys who are in the Oregon legislature. And
Speaking as a trial attorney myself, my
yes.
brethren
They're
sometimes
all.
cause too much harm.
Yeah,
Okay, I'm
well,
with the skiers on this one, and I've told the trial lawyers that.
understand that, if someone's negligent and, the chair falls off because they didn't maintain it properly, you're going to get sued, and you should. But if somebody runs into a tree because they were going too fast,
Or a
and
snow gun.
you didn't put up a fence in front of the tree, so, that you shouldn't be negligent for
Or
that.
worse still, was the fence you put up in front of the tree enough to warn the guy not to run into the tree? That's
Yeah,
what we had to put up with in Idaho. Okay. Was
it's
there enough of a warning not to run into the snow gun? I
right.
see Mark Liebman with his hand up. Mark, you can unmute.
I'm kind of with in between betwixt and between on this. I did a fair amount of research on this issue for another publication a couple of years ago, and there's if you the issue about the person, the chair coming apart and crashing down on somebody, or getting run over by a snowmobile by from the resort, there's no claim on that. By the same token, the one that's in the biggest gray area right now, and the one that where there's a lot of debate, is not the person who skis off or decides to ski out of bounds and run into a tree and kill himself, or even run into a lift tower and kill himself. I mean, it's there, you can see it. It's the skier that I'm going to use the word reckless, and I'm going to define reckless as either stoned, skiing too fast, or drunk. And those skiers are the ones that are causing most of the accidents, most of the injuries, and the Colorado law prohibits suing these people. It makes it very difficult to sue these guys and the resort, because the resorts have the deep pockets, theoretically. And the trial lawyers, as Jay well knows, go where the money is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think that what I observe from my, going around and skiing at a lot of different places is that ski patrol is constantly telling me to slow down. And, they used to not do that. And, the resorts can only do so much to prevent reckless behavior. If somebody runs into a person and they should be sued. They should be personally liable for that injury. And if the resort served them, five martinis at lunch, they should be sued too. But if the resort hasn't contributed in any way, then it should be the individual's responsibility to pay for that claim. And where's the personal accountability here? Like you said, that the lawyers go after, follow the money, but that's not right. That it shouldn't be like that. And there needs to be some guardrails in place. Otherwise, there's a half a dozen ski resorts in Oregon that aren't going to make it. It's just they're one frivolous lawsuit away from going under.
Well, I think that we've got ourselves another topic for a professional development seminar sometime in the near future. Are there any other questions for Doug? Going once. Ah, Jane Wyckoff. Yes, you may unmute. Nice to see you,
Oh,
Jane.
nice to see you, Jay.
Thank you.
3 years ago, Doug, I wanted to let you know that I was writing an article for our Far West Skiers Guide magazine
Yes.
and for the Ski Association, and I didn't know much about Snowvana, so I called a number, and I don't know whether it was you or someone I talked to, but they were so helpful, gave me
Good.
all the information. Was it you I talked to?
I have no idea, but probably not, actually.
All kinds of information and was so helpful, sent me pictures. So every year I make sure that I give your show coverage in our, this is our publication. It's an
Okay.
annual
Yes.
magazine.
I've seen
And
it.
then
Cool.
our Northwest Ski Club Council, we carried a picture
Oh,
this year.
yeah.
And they're part of our organization. We have
Very
nine
well.
regional councils in 12 Western states. And
Yeah.
I wanted to thank you, first of all, for being so helpful to a ski journalist trying to write an article, which was great. And thank you for the wonderful work you're doing for nonprofits, because we're a nonprofit organization of ski clubs. Every year, I hear about your great shows from my friends up there in Portland and Seattle. So thank you very much. I just wanted to extend my appreciation to you.
Thank you, Jane. That's very
Yep, thank you, Jane. Any other questions? Yes, Greg Snow, you may unmute.
right, hello. Hear me okay?
Yeah, but you just turned your face off. Ah, there you go. Now you're back.
Okay, cool. Anyway, I would like to go back and speak to the ski patrol. I'm a pro patrol at Buck Hill, and I'm out there today. I'm out there tomorrow morning, and a lot of what we do is prevention. I mean, we just to speak about the safety, anything from the bee netting to educating. I picked up half a dozen kids that were out for lessons. So, I mean, we're trying to be proactive with this and being not the bad guys, not the bad cops. I hate taking tickets from people. I'd rather just help them get up and try to give them a little ski lesson. And if they're intoxicated, then we call mountain ops and take care of it. But we want to promote. I mean, it's constantly the safety and the promotion of our sport. And Buck Hill has an amazing history, as we all know. I mean, I was skiing down Lindsay's run today, and it's a Kildow's climb up to the starting shack, and it just brings great joy to my heart being out there.
So,
And then
what is
Mark and I are, yeah,
your
go ahead.
question, Greg? What's
What's it again?
your
What's
question?
my,
What's your question?
oh, it was just about just how great the Indy Pass is for promoting air. I know Buck isn't on it this year, and Highland is where I used to patrol. And then Mark and I, we did our big swing last year with the Indy Pass, and we're doing it again this year in 2 weeks in New England. And it is just a fantastic promotion. And I just want to compliment you on that, just getting the mom and pops involved in this and that whole spirit of skiing and snowboarding.
Great. Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Going, yes, Roger Lohr. Hello.
Yeah, hey there. Hey, Doug, I sent you a direct question. Country skiing and sport. Do you know if our ski expo is still on for next year? Because that would make three ski shows in the Boston area.
I believe so. I think that they are doing their show at their warehouse there in kind of in south of town a little bit, and but I haven't heard otherwise, and I assume they are doing it. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be, I know they don't have a whole lot of ski areas there, so it really would be you and Snowbound, and
Yeah.
there are different concepts between if you're closer to Boston and they're in Connecticut at the casino. Are you hearing anything from the ski areas with regard, or you're not talking to the ski areas, so I guess it's about the sponsors and the retailers. So I'm assuming Country Ski and Sport is not in Snowvana, or you don't know.
No, I think they're going to continue to do their own
No.
thing, and I think they have a great event down there. It's primarily a ski sale, and I think there's room for two in a market the size of Boston. There's 5 million people there, and probably 1 million skiers. Who knows? But yeah, and we have heard from we have 11 ski resorts that are committed already, and it's still February, so we think we're going to have a really good group.
Well, that's perfect timing, everybody. We are on 60 Minutes on the Dot. I'm Jay Flemma. This has been Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio and Golf NewsNet. And it has been a professional development seminar from the North American Snow Sports Journalists Association. Thank you, President Bob Curley. Thank you, Jeff Blumenfeld, and the Professional Development Committee. And the biggest thank you of all to our special guest, Doug Fish, who we look very much forward to shredding with later on this year.
Thank you, Jay. It's been an honor.
All right, we'll catch everybody next time. Remember, we will be having another one of these in March. We will have the date for you shortly. It will be Sam Weintraub talking about how to become a big YouTube star. Take care, everybody. See you next time.